I think we've had enough time that's passed to collect our thoughts on that college football national championship game. Clemson just absolutely housing Alabama. And a guy who definitely predicted this was Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. I mean, he was all over this, taking Clemson to just smoke Alabama. Now, you did like Clemson at the beginning of the season. And I remember, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you liked Clemson to win this game. But my goodness, when you look at when this thing is 14-13, and I even made reference to something you brought up on our show not too long ago during the game, saying that Brad Edwards mentioned just from an FPI optic that this game has that potential of maybe being, you know, like that 2006 Texas-USC game that was just fantastic. And all of a sudden you're watching just the first real 10 minutes of this game thinking, okay, this might be that. And then, whew, Clemson was having nothing to do with that.
Yeah, what was crazy is the way that it started with Alabama throwing the pick six, and then Alabama gets the ball back, goes down, scores a touchdown. Clemson answers with a touchdown. Alabama answers with another touchdown, misses the extra point. Then Alabama holds. They get Clemson to punt, and then they drive right down. And so we're still in the first quarter at this point. I mean, we're like under a minute to go in the first quarter. Alabama was, I think it was second in goal, but they were at the one-yard line and about to score a touchdown on the third straight drive after the opening pick six. And you're thinking, man, Alabama's offense is just tearing up this number one defense of Clemson. And at the same time, at that point of the game, Clemson had basically made one play on offense. It was a 62-yard pass on third and 14, which had set up their first touchdown. But Alabama was by far having the better of play at that stage. They end up getting held to a field goal on like the first or second play of the second quarter. And who would have imagined that Alabama would never score again the rest of the game after that? Of course, they continue to move the ball. And that's kind of – I'm kind of torn on this game. I mean, there's no question that Clemson dominated this game in certain respects, and there's no dancing around the fact that the game was over with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, it was absolutely over. No chance for Alabama. But Alabama – it wasn't your conventional blowout. I mean, that – Alabama basically moved the ball on the best defense in college football into the red zone pretty much on every drive of the game except for the two that were intercepted, at least for the first three quarters. And yet it was their inability to punch it in. I'll go back to this. That, you know, we all hear coaches talk so much, and at a certain point you kind of get numb to it, and some of these terms that coaches throw out at the time, you just kind of roll your eyes, whatever. And they love to talk about situations. Like red zone efficiency and third down efficiency. And this game was a great example of how big those are. Alabama had the ball inside the 20 four times. I believe it was inside the 25 five times and scored one touchdown. Okay, Clemson, on the other hand, on third down, 10 of 15 for the game, including 8 out of 12 on third and 5 yards or more. I mean, like obvious passing situations, 8 out of 12. And they didn't just convert. They converted huge plays. I don't know if you saw I tweeted this out yesterday afternoon. Before Clemson's final drive, in which they just milked the remainder of the clock, heading into that drive, over 60% of their yardage for the game had come on third and long. Which was just, it was amazing. But the thing is, you take away the Clemson third down, you take away Alabama's red zone, and Alabama actually outplayed Clemson on all the other plays, but those were the most significant plays, and Clemson won almost all of them.
Well, and Brad, I guess maybe you kind of already answered my question, but this felt to me like it was a championship game decided way more by just big plays, some big busts than what we've seen in the past. What do you read into that?
Well, look, there were two plays by Alabama defensively where they just lost a guy in coverage. One of them, where Clemson set up Clemson's first touchdown, was a third and 14 where the safety guessed that the ball was coming to the underneath man, and he started moving toward him, and then Trevor Lawrence threw it right over his head to the guy who was streaking down the field, and that, like I said, set up the first score. And then there was really the backbreaker, which was in the third quarter, where the DB tried to jam the receiver at the line of scrimmage, and then he went to the ground with an injury, left the guy wide open. He scored. But even after he caught the ball wide open, he still had to make a guy miss, and it was that same safety who had guessed wrong in the first quarter was the one who missed the tackle and allowed him to go 74 yards for a touchdown. So 62-yard gain, a 74-yard gain, both of them on the shoulders of the guy who was Alabama's most experienced DB. And so I've heard a lot of people try to attribute this to, well, Alabama was just so inexperienced in the defensive backfield, and that's the reason. And look, he did only start two games last year, but he was their most experienced DB. And look, at the end of the day, they had a lot of inexperience in that area, but so did Clemson. I mean, you're talking, yep, it's a true freshman quarterback throwing predominantly to a true freshman and true sophomore receiver. And so it's not like experience was a major factor. To me, the biggest thing was that Alabama's defensive front was not able to get pressure on Trevor Lawrence. And that was a matchup I expected them to win going into this. And Clemson's offensive line, they couldn't run the ball. But when it came to pass protection, they dominated.
Well, and Brad, you sort of hit on the point that I wanted to bring up next. And if we're going to talk about Clemson's inexperience, two guys that simply dominated on the offensive side were freshmen, and Justin Ross as well with Trevor Lawrence. And I could not be more impressed with what I saw from Trevor Lawrence. But when I watched Justin Ross at one point, I thought I was watching sort of a Calvin Johnson, Megatron type domination at one point.
Yeah.
When he got going and just started making catch after catch, one-handed catch here, you know, picking the ball over a guy's shoulder pad when Trevor Lawrence actually kind of threw behind him. I mean, it was so amazing on top of that Notre Dame performance, and to see what he did against guys that are simply going to be playing on Sunday. Man, I don't think we could say enough about what he did in that game either.
Oh, yeah, he was huge. And for people who didn't catch it on the game broadcast, he's from the state of Alabama. He was the number one high school player in the state of Alabama coming out in last year's recruiting class. And Alabama wanted him bad. He went to Clemson, I think, because of the opportunity to play more and get the ball, you know, more often, because Alabama's top three receivers coming back into this year were true freshmen last year. So they already had an established core of guys. He knew he would be one of four or five if he had gone to Alabama. Whereas, look, he was one of two at Clemson this year who were, you know, really big stars, and he came on late in the season. I tell you what, mentioning Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross, they're the receiver, the two true freshmen. I think this game was won by Clemson back at the end of September, when Dabo Swinney made the decision to go with Trevor Lawrence as his starting quarterback. And Kelly Bryant was the returning starter. He'd gotten in the playoff the year before. They were still undefeated this year. And yet he knew, in order to beat Alabama at the end of the season, not only did he need someone who was a more effective downfield passer, but he needed to go ahead and get him those reps. He needed to get him that comfort level, not only running the offense, but the chemistry with those receivers. And I've never seen a true freshman look more comfortable than he was on that stage. Remember, I mean, Tua was a true freshman when he came in the second half last year in the championship game against Georgia, but he never looked as comfortable. I mean, he was scrambling around a lot there. You know, he had some big mistakes that he made in addition to the big plays that he made. Trevor Lawrence never made any mistakes. I mean, he was just calm and collected, looked like he'd been doing that his whole life.
Brad, you've obviously covered college football for a long time. We were talking a little bit about Lawrence and his future over the next, you know, couple of years, however long that ends up being at Clemson. You know, it feels like in our lifetime, in my lifetime at least, watching college football, I'm a little bit younger. You know, Peyton Manning was kind of one of those can't-miss guys coming out of Tennessee. Andrew Luck certainly was one of those can't-miss NFL guys coming out of Stanford. Does Trevor Lawrence at Clemson maybe have the opportunity to be that next kind of just can't-miss quarterback prospect coming out of college football?
Maybe. We'll see. I don't think there's any question that he would be the number one pick in this draft if he were eligible.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever said that about a true freshman quarterback before. Maybe a sophomore quarterback who had one more year to go. And I know there have been other freshmen that may have been said about, but a freshman quarterback, this is a new one. And look, he certainly has the prototypical size that you look for in an NFL quarterback at a time when there have been some breakthroughs for the shorter quarterbacks lately, you know, where it's not necessarily a given that that's what you're looking for. But as far as what they've traditionally looked for in a quarterback at the NFL level, that height, that arm strength, He has all that, not to mention some athleticism. He certainly, you know, he's not Kyler Murray by any stretch, but he's a guy who can, he can run and pick up a first down when he has to. And just, just by all accounts, a great character guy too. And so, I mean, he's got everything the NFL is looking for. And, you know, if he continues to improve, I mean, I think that the, you know, there's no limit to what he can do, because like I said, even without that extra improvement, he's already good enough to be the first pick in the draft. I mean, teams would be trading up to get him right now if they could.
Talking college football, Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Brad, I don't want to, you know, sound the alarm bells or, you know, really overstate Alabama, but I mean, 44-16, I got to assume, is going to be posted all over the place during their offseason workouts. But I mean, where do they go from here? I mean, it's one thing to lose a national championship game, but to be embarrassed at that level where Nick Saban has just been so good, what are your initial expectations for this group going forward and getting sort of rid of this feeling?
Yeah, now, first of all, I would think there's a good chance that you're going to get Alabama-Clemson again next year. Mm-hmm. You know, that certainly Clemson is going to be there, because you look at their schedule, and there's no one in the ACC who can challenge them. Almost every guy on that offense is back. And even though they lose that defensive line, they still will probably have the best defense in the ACC. So they're going to be there. I think with Alabama, look, we've seen this a lot of times where teams have lost that last game. It happened to Clemson last year in the semifinal. I mean, they were embarrassed by Alabama. And they had a group of guys who decided to come back instead of going pro. And this was their mission all year long. And they performed, you know, when that time came back around. And maybe that'll happen with Alabama. It happened with Alabama after the 2008 season going into the 2009 season. And they won the SEC and the national championship that year after losing an undefeated season to Florida in the SEC title game the year before. So, look, that was embarrassing. You're right. I mean, they had never lost a game by more than 14 points under Saban. And this one, it wasn't just they were down 28. I mean, they were down 28 early in the fourth quarter. And they basically didn't score again after the first quarter. I mean, this offense is, like, historically good. Was essentially shut out for the final three quarters. I mean, they scored a field goal in the second play of the second quarter, and that was the last of the scoring. So, yeah, this is going to be a major source of motivation throughout the off season for them, even for Tua. I mean, look, for all the praise on Tua, and like for a lot of people, was a lock to win the Heisman late in the season. Two of his last three games were very humbling. I'm not saying he's a guy who needed to be humbled. I mean, I think he's a fairly humble kid, but as far as just all the hype, he did not look good against Georgia in the SEC championship game. Obviously, Oklahoma has a horrible defense. You kind of throw that one out. And then the next time he faced a good defense, Clemson, he made some really nice plays in that game, but he also made some big mistakes. And so I think the motivation for him alone is going to be tremendous. And I'll just throw this out there too, because every time Alabama loses, everyone wants to ask, okay, is this the end of the dynasty?
Yeah.
And I will just say that this is a very important season for Alabama as far as how much longer this thing goes, because you couldn't ask for something more motivational than what happened to them the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, it's probably Tua's last season, and I don't see a guy waiting in the wings to just, as a quarterback, pick up the very next year where Tua left off. I don't see that. You know, there's not a five-star guy who's sitting next on the depth chart. So if Alabama doesn't win it next year, look, I'm not saying they're going away. They could just become like Ohio State, where this is a team that's among the favorites every year, but they're no longer the favorite every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what's riding for Alabama on, you know, 2019.
Brad, away from the championship game, we've seen a couple of Big 12 coaches either get hired by NFL teams or at least be strongly considered in Cliff Kingsbury. And now Matt Rhule at Baylor, you know, just given the success that they've had in college, does it surprise you that maybe they're making that jump right to the National Football League as head coaches?
Yeah, or you mean the lack of success?
The lack thereof, sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're two very different coaches, obviously, and very different styles of play. You know, I actually did the Temple Bowl game on radio right after Matt Rhule left to take the Baylor job. And so I remember calling that game, and so I'm very familiar with like his style of offense from doing that team. in the season that he had coached them. And they were, everything was built on like just toughness and what, and obviously a very different identity than what Cliff Kingsbury's offenses were. So Matt Rhule is not really the typical Big 12 coach as far as that goes. So I do think they're different. Kingsbury was obviously just, I mean, I get it, but I don't at the same time. Like, I get that that's where the NFL is going with their style of offense, and he knows it well. He's good at calling it. But at the same time, the idea that someone could get fired by a Big 12, not just a Big 12, but his alma mater.
Yeah.
He just got fired as a head coach by his alma mater, and an NFL team grabs. And that, not just NFL teams were fighting over it. It's crazy. I mean, Rhule is a different deal, but I tell you what, if coaches like him have success with that type of offense more and more in the NFL, there are going to be some major, major bidding wars for these types of coaches in the future, because previously, great coordinators, there's not been competition for those guys between the NFL and college. Like, there might be a few college teams that are going after the same guy, but never the NFL going after that guy also. And, we've talked for years about how insane head coaching salaries are. Can you imagine what offensive coordinator salaries could become if you have a guy who's just elite at play calling and NFL sees him as just as good of a fit as college? I mean, if you end up making $4 million a year to call plays, you don't need to become a head coach.
No.
some people could just become career coordinators.
Brad, I want to get your thoughts as we kind of wrap things up here about Jalen Hurts. We know he's now entered the transfer database, which I think we were all expecting him to do. A couple of schools, I don't know, does the SEC, will he not be allowed to transfer within the SEC, even though he would be a grad transfer? Because I immediately think of Auburn, who did not get Kelly Bryant, and they thought maybe they would get him. I think of them, but then it was also brought to my attention, and seems very intriguing, that maybe Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley come calling for Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, see, Hurts, first of all, I think the rule change does not allow teams to do that anymore, to block a guy from certain schools, not to mention Hurts is a grad transfer.
Right,
it's not just a normal transfer. So I think he can go wherever he wants to. I don't really see Oklahoma as the perfect fit for him, because I don't think he's an instinctive enough passer to thrive in that offense. Yeah. I think he's going to go somewhere where they're really looking for a dual threat guy. I mean, look, Kyler Murray just happened to be a great runner, but he could do everything they needed him to do in the passing game. But I don't think that's what Oklahoma. I don't think Oklahoma is looking for a dual threat. I think first and foremost they're looking for a guy who can distribute in the passing game, and I don't think that's the best fit for Hurts. Auburn is a fit. I tell you what, though, that's just as revered as he is at Alabama. That would be, boy, he would cut those ties forever if he went to Auburn. And then, I look around at other places. Some people have speculated Maryland just because of the Mike Locksley connection. Mm-hmm. I've seen some people mentioning Miami because they're in desperate need of a quarterback. Yeah. And Miami makes more sense. The only thing with that, I don't know if it's important to him. It's only 1 year. He only has 1 year of eligibility left. I don't know if it's important to him to be closer to home. He's from the Houston area. So I think all those schools, any FBS school in Texas that's looking for a quarterback could be in play as well. But of all the ones I've seen around, Miami makes the most sense, because that's a program that should be solid defensively. And it, based on what I've seen of those guys, it's a place where he should be able to go in and win the job. And that's another part of this. Like, we've seen guys transfer before and not win the starting job where they go. And that's a question you got to ask if you're Hurts. Like, are you dead set on starting to the point where that's how you're going to choose your school, is how weak their depth chart is at quarterback? Or are you looking to go somewhere else where you still have a chance to win a national title, recognizing that because of it, you're competing against other 4- and 5-star guys and might not actually win the job? So there are a lot of things on the table here.
Brad Edwards, once again, ESPN College Football Insider. Brad, as always, appreciate your weekly visits with us. I know we'll be checking in with you time to time throughout the offseason as we get things cranked back up in August. But enjoy a little bit of the break, too, and be well.
Well, thank you. I was going to say it's been a fun season, but it really wasn't. I know on the Nebraska end, it ended a lot better than it started, but nationally, there wasn't a lot that happened. I mean, it's preseason 1-2, both went undefeated, played mm-hmm. each other, so maybe we'll get a more interesting season next year, although I'm kind of doubting it. I'm thinking we're going to have Alabama-Clemson 5, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Much appreciated, Brad. Talk soon.
See you guys.
You bet. All right, this is kind of a follow-up. One of the things we talked about with Trevor Lawrence and his future, Nick, perhaps another option out there for him as opposed to playing the next 2 years at Clemson.
And it involves one of the quarterbacks we've been comparing him to.
It does. Father. God, it does. Is this meant to be?
Isn't that freaky?
Oh, I like this. It's AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.